This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. It's good to be back with you. You know, we took a break here at the show last week. There was just too much going on. There were too many issues that required people's attention. I didn't really want to distract from that, and I still don't. And those issues are still going on. You know, I want to send much love to everybody out there speaking up, standing up for Black lives. Everybody who protested this weekend, the scenes out of so many different major cities were so beautiful. I hope everybody out there is staying safe. I hope you are taking care of yourself and the people around you, as I so frequently say on this show. I am so excited to be back. I am so excited for today's guest. I've got Moore Kismet on the show, the young prodigy themselves. Moore Kismet has a brand new song out right now featuring their mom, Mama Kismet, and the song is called Flare. It's the first single off of their upcoming EP on the legendary label Never Say Die. And as you're about to hear, that is just the tip of the iceberg. Moore Kismet also working on an animated TV show called Stargazers. They are writing a ton of new music. There is an album in the works for next year already. And I'm sure once the EP is out, there will be plenty of remixes, collaborations. Everything Moore Kismet puts out, I think, really raises the bar. And you'll hear me tell them this in the conversation, but their music just sounds like nothing else I've ever heard. Moore Kismet is the future. It makes me happy that the show could come back with this episode, which, by the way, was not planned at all. We had been scheduled to do this for weeks before any of the current craziness around the country started happening. And actually, we've been trying to get together to make this podcast happen for probably at least 6 months. You know, every time I would go out to LA, I would hit them up, and the timing just never worked out. The scheduling never worked out. I remember one time in particular, I was coming to LA and I sent Moore Kismet a DM saying, "Hey, I'm going to be here these dates. Why don't I swing by your house and we can do the podcast?" And the message they sent back to me just made me laugh really hard, because they said, "Well, my mom's not going to be here at that time, and I don't think she would be comfortable with a man coming to the house when she's not around," which just made me laugh so hard because, yeah, I had clearly not thought about the implications of me, a full-grown man, also a stranger, going over to hang out with a 15-year-old at their house with nobody else around. So yeah, I had to check myself a little on that one. But we finally made it happen. I had an amazing time chatting with them, and we'll get into it in just a second. Before we do, I just want to say, obviously, there is so much going on in the world, and there's also going to be a lot to chew on in the episode you're about to hear. I would love to hear thoughts, reactions, and just generally check in with all of my listeners out there. Let me know how you're doing. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, anything at all, you can always hit me up. I'm at Willie Joy on all social media. The show is at Back2BackPod, or you can email me directly, backtobackpod@gmail.com. If you enjoy this episode, I would love it if you would help circulate it to more people. Word of mouth is how this show grows. We thrive on the strength of our community and our amazing listeners. So tag us in your stories, send me a tweet. I love connecting with everybody out there. And while you're at it, keep amplifying the important voices, talking about the Black Lives Matter protests, talking about police reform. That is a great way to be an activist, even if you are not comfortable going out and protesting yourself, or if you're immunocompromised. There's always a way you can pitch in. Let's keep those donations going to organizations that matter. I'm still going to be linking to some of those in the description, as well as linking to More Kismet and everything they have going on. With that said, we should get straight into this because I really loved this conversation. I think you're going to love it too. So let's do this. This is me and More Kismet back to back. Let's go. So we talked already before we started recording, but I do want to say I'm starting a lot of these interviews this way. It just feels kind of needed. How are you, first of all, before we really get into anything?
Oh, that is such a loaded question.
Yeah.
I'm doing as okay as I can be right now. Like, everything is just like really, I don't know. It's really frustrating. It's really, really frustrating to kind of have to live in such a textbook moment of history. But like, I didn't ever think I would ever end up living through something like this. And especially not in the middle of a global pandemic where,
yeah,
going out to protest or going out to speak your mind or petition or whatever could potentially lead to you losing your life, especially if you you care about the cause. You support the movement, but you're immunocompromised and you shouldn't be leaving, period.
Yeah.
Which I know most don't, but like it all sucks.
I completely agree. And it's such a complicated issue because, you know, so I'm in Washington, D.C., and, you know, there's huge, huge protests going on here, as there are in lots of major cities. You know, seeing this many people, this outpouring of energy is amazing. But then absolutely it's happening during the pandemic, and that makes it such a thorny issue. Like I don't even know how I feel. It's a crazy, because I want people to protest, but man.
Even if you don't know it, if you're immunocompromised or if your family is immunocompromised, the last thing you should be doing is going out and protesting, because it's entirely unsafe. Like, it isn't even contained. There is no usable vaccine yet. There are no like open testing centers anywhere for like a lot of like lower income communities.
Yeah.
Like, it makes no sense, but at the same time, I understand why people are doing it and it needs to be done.
At the same time, it's like, well, no, this is the time, and it almost has to happen now. We're seeing small, not enough, but small steps being taken already. You can tell the pressure is on, you know, to people who actually make the laws. And so,
yeah,
in a certain regard, this had to happen now. And it probably, I mean, it had to happen sooner than now. But the fact that it is now, we have to lean into it. We have to keep pushing while, you know, the fire is on. But yeah, it's the timing of it is just insane. And so I want to talk about you, though, and your experience, because, you know, all of what's going on, the effects of it that we're going to see for decades to come, this is going to affect your generation. You know,
yeah,
arguably, it's going to affect your generation more than it's going to affect my generation. And at the same time, you know, you're 15 years old, right?
Yes.
And so you can't even vote yet. You know, there's like...
Nope, not for another 3 years. And that is so unfortunate because I want to vote his ass out so bad. I swear to God. Oh my God. I'm so mad that I'm not old enough to vote yet. And
it's got to be a crazy feeling, right? To be that age and to see this happening and to know that
and not be able to do anything other than signing petitions or donating. And I can't even donate because I don't even make much money from like royalties and shit. But like, you know, I can't. It's like, it's almost physically impossible for me to do something that will actually make an impact other than music or signing petitions or educating people, even though no Black person in this goddamn universe going through this right now has the need to educate anybody when there are so many like amiable resources online that you could easily find and you look up and take into consideration yourself. And I know that kind of comes off rude, but it really is not any Black person's responsibility to educate anyone that's not white or a non-Black person of color.
Oh, 100%.
It's not our responsibility to educate you on something that should have been eradicated decades ago. And it's not our responsibility to, it's not, even though we do sometimes, because, you know, it's the thought that counts and, you know, you're doing this and we can't, and we thank you for that. But also there is a larger portion of those who are going out to protest that aren't even protesting and are instead causing damage to property and then disappearing without a trace like the Avatar and ending up leaving that blame on Black people. And I just, it is not a Black person's responsibility to educate anyone on any of this, especially seeing as how it was predominantly white people that started racism or started racist ideology to begin with against people of color.
Oh yeah, there's no debate about that.
It's not our responsibility to educate you on how to fix something that should have been fixed ages ago. And even though we do sometimes, and there are resources created by people just like me for you to use, that's all we're giving you. That is all we're giving you.
Yeah. Oh, you're absolutely right. You're right on every single count. I mean, I will say, one thing you can do, and one thing I've seen you do that I think makes a huge difference, and I talk about this on the show a lot, just kind of in a general sense of people wanting to, you know, outside of what's happening right now, but just in general, in people's own lives, you know, making a change, it's hard to understand how you as one person can make a big change in the world. And to me, it all starts from the people around you and your local community and the people close to you. And yeah, one thing I've seen you do a lot that I love is that you uplift a lot of other artists around you. I've seen you just a few days ago, you posted an awesome list of artists for people to check out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, many of whom I knew, some of whom I didn't. I went and checked out a whole bunch of them. I highly encourage everyone else to do that. But I wanted to point that out, A, because I think that is something that you do, that you, even as a 15-year-old who can't vote, that you can do that. And people listen to you, and you know, you do have a platform that I think is growing bigger and bigger. So in that sense, I think that's awesome. I just wanted to give you props for that. And I also want to, you know, just talk to you about that kind of idea, because that seems to come naturally to you, the want to sort of bring other people in and to uplift other artists. And that, in my experience, that is not the way many artists act in the music
industry. Oh, yeah, no. And it's, and honestly, when I first started doing like collaborations with my friends and releasing them as I started gaining notoriety as an artist, everyone who's managed me in the past is always, including my current manager, he stopped, but he doesn't anymore. But like he's literally told me, hey, I know how much you like collaborating with these people and blah, 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 but they're smaller artists and you're starting to get larger and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like,
yeah, let's talk about this.
Okay. And bitch, like I'm doing one, these people are my friends. Two, how is collaborating with a smaller artist, especially somebody that is also, that albeit small, is well known in the general community?
Yeah.
That you don't think, like, honestly, like people would, if I hadn't collabed with that person already, don't you think I would be getting a ton of slurries from people who are just starting to find out about that person saying, oh my God, they're so talented, you should collaborate them. Oh my God. Like, you don't think I would have been getting like tons and tons and tons of messages on Instagram live videos or DMs or whatever, or public live tweets asking me to collaborate with these artists already. So, you know, cut out the middleman, support my damn friends, support myself. And look, like literally the last time I released a collaboration with one of my friends, it, the last time I was told, to not do a collaboration with a smaller artist or to not promote, a collab with a smaller artist as heavy was my collaboration with literally one of my best friends, Schuster. It was called Storm, and we released it on, their management's record label, Nova Lotus, which is not a well-known record label, unfortunately. They released some dope music, but they just, a lot of their stuff, albeit good, doesn't really do so hot. And that's very unfortunate considering I know how much work that the founder and the CEO of that label put into pushing their artists and managing their artists. And I know how much those artists put into their music.
Yeah, and running a record label, real quick, running a record label is so hard and it's so unforgiving. There are so many amazing record labels with great music that just don't get heard. It's that, and I don't always dig in so much to that side of it. I'm glad you said that because, man, that's such a thankless job running a record label.
Oh my God. To continue on from what I was saying earlier, that track, Storm, amassed 250,000 plus plays on Spotify within like 2-3 months. And like everyone fell in love with it. And I was just like, this is literally one of my best performing tracks on Spotify.
Yeah.
In second comes the VIP of my song Escape from Never Say Die. I think that alone kind of like convinced everybody that, okay, maybe them collaborating with smaller artists is not the worst thing in the world. And I was just like, I've been telling y'all this for 2 years. Thank you. Thank you for letting me do this. Literally.
I mean, it's crazy to me. So that kind of mentality, right? The management telling an artist, don't work with somebody. They're too small. They're too unknown.
Hurt your brand.
Yeah, it'll hurt your brand. It'll somehow, like the idea that somehow associating with somebody who has a smaller platform will make you smaller. So that exists in so many levels of this game. Like there's the management telling the artist that it goes into booking, promoters not wanting to take a chance on a smaller artist because they don't have a big enough platform yet. And it all comes back to money, right? Is that people think that it's going to affect their bottom line. But then what happens is it becomes this echo chamber effect. This is why people complain about festivals having the same lineup year after year after year and not taking chances on new people. It's a chicken and an egg thing, right? Because if you're a small artist and the festival is telling you, oh, sorry, you're too small, you can't play any gigs, get bigger and then we'll book you. It's like, well, how do I get bigger if no one books me, right?
Right.
And it's a very frustrating part of this whole industry. And I love seeing you just not even think about that because that's how movements are formed and that's how changes are made.
Yeah, because firstly, literally there are like so many other smaller artists or like artists that don't have as big of a platform as you do that are insanely talented and have skills to offer to your music that will allow you to explore different horizons and everything. And I just feel like that's very important as a musician to collaborate with people that you don't expect to collaborate with and just work with these people and build relationships with them and get a better sense of clarity in music production with them.
Yes.
And secondly, you can't hit your bottom line if your bottom line has been a bottom line for like 3 years. Like that's the thing. If you haven't been getting booked already, even just from doing like solo shit and like remixes and stuff, and you haven't been making no money off of that, and like literally like your only source of income is shows, but you don't get booked for shit, you can't say this is going to affect your bottom line.
Because of
pre-existing circumstances, your bottom line is already a bottom line and you aren't making nothing.
Yeah.
So you can't make money an excuse if you weren't making much money or any money to begin with.
Yes.
So it just makes no sense why like,
it's all about appearances. Everybody wants to pretend that they're the most popping artist. Every artist management wants, you know, because artist management, and I get it, they're doing their job, right? Like, their job is to make us look like the biggest artist of all time. Yeah. They want, you know, they want to like lure festival bookers to their artists, all that kind of thing. So they're doing their job in terms of, you know, trying to make it look exclusive and big and, you know, all of that. Yeah. But it's so dumb to me. And I wanted to say, on your note of collaborating with smaller artists or unknown artists, also, it's like, if you're the bigger producer, bigger, quote unquote, how do you think you're going to find new creativity, new ideas? Like, what is always the most exciting thing to me? It's finding a new artist that I hadn't heard of that is doing something crazy that I've never heard before. Exactly. It's really not hearing something from an established artist who I already know, whether I like them or not, even if they're one of my favorite artists.
Yep.
When that newness, that excitement, that discovery, nothing compares to that.
Exactly. And this is why I, even though I love music from larger artists sometimes, you know, I find solace in listening to tracks by smaller, more underground producers or producers at the same level as I am, like still trying to make ends meet, but still churning out dope ass content, and it just about blows up, but not really. So like artists,
that's the most exciting time.
Definitely. So like, take for example, myself, Chuck Sutton, Lax City, like Voltra, they literally churn out tunes like a pro, and it's nothing like anything I've ever heard before. And it's the same thing with us. Like, we always try and strive for doing something different, but staying true to the sounds that we've formulated and the sounds that we've created for ourselves that people recognize and know and love. The newness is good. Newness is just good, period.
Oh yeah, we need it. I mean, in especially in the dance music world right now, I think we desperately need it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, sweet Jesus, we do.
Yeah. Okay, so we're talking about, you know, bigger artists, quote unquote, versus smaller artists and size of platforms. It wasn't so long ago, right, that you were a totally new artist. So, you know, I want to talk about kind of that arc, like, let's take it all the way back. First of all, do you remember when you first became aware of dance music, electronic music?
Yes. I first became aware of electronic music at the age of 7, 8. And I was just like listening to like some like heavy, like trans progressive house, like Audion, any artist from Anjuna.
I don't know
how I came across it, but literally one day I was in computer science class and we were doing an independent assignment and she said we could listen to music. So I went on YouTube and I looked for like stuff and I found fucking Hindsight by Audion, and then I clicked on it and I was just blown away. Like it took me to a whole spiritual realm and I was just, it made me feel so good. And I was just like, what is this? And I'm just like bouncing my head like, like I can't, like, I don't, and after that, I just started listening to electronic music daily and daily and daily. And that's actually how I ended up meeting, my friend, like one of my old friends, and like we just like really connected over that. And like as time progressed, I started to get into different styles, and it went from like trance and progressive to trap, and then from trap to dubstep, and then from dubstep it was into like hybrid trap, and then hybrid trap, experimental trap, and now we're here. So, yeah.
And I wouldn't even know what to call what here is now anyway. You know, I think especially with what you're doing, it's
here is just me.
Yeah,
here
exactly.
is literally just me. I
see so much potential. Does it feel to you like you're still just getting started, or does it feel to you like you've been doing this for a while and like finally you're kind of getting to where you want to be?
I'm kind of getting to that point, but I still think that there's a very, very long way for me to go. As far as like getting everything in check and like getting all of my stuff down, because like I'm still experimenting with my styles. I'm still trying to like fuse stuff together. Like I'm experimenting with like R&B and mixing that in with electronic.
Okay, a couple things in what you just said. First of all, it's crazy that you found that kind of music when you were 7 or 8. Second of all, it's also crazy to me that you had a computer science course at 7 or 8.
This is at like the computer science course was at like between the ages of 9 to 11, 12, actually, because that went from like me like transitioning out of elementary into middle, and middle is where I had those computer science classes. But yeah, I was in like Project Lead the Way classes, honors classes.
What is Project Lead the Way?
Project Lead the Way is it is a computer science class specifically dedicated to learning about how computer science and science in general, as far as technology, can expand past what is used inside a classroom setting and can be used in real world situations to combat problems and.
Oh, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, definitely. It was such a wonderful class. I learned a lot that I probably don't remember now, but I do know for a fact that that class was very, very enjoyable and is actually where I met a good chunk of my current friends in addition to that school as a whole. But like a lot of my current friends went to that school with me and also took that class. And it was very, very, very useful. I'm pretty sure she will never hear this a day in her life, but shout out Miss Milan. She was my teacher in that class.
Yes.
She was
I love shouting everything. Out teachers.
She's, oh my God, she was literally the best. I love her so much. She was such a wonderful and informative teacher. She helped me out with a lot, and she was literally like my road dog when it came to talking about anime on free time. it was literally the best. And I love her, and she's literally the best.
Yeah, those teachers, it's foundational. I had a teacher when I was in fourth and fifth grade, and he would, he was just very nurturing in general, but the same way, like we talked about so much that wasn't school, you know, and that was so important to me at the time. Like I was super into wrestling when I was that age, but we didn't get the pay-per-view channels where they were airing it. So he would tape it for me and bring me tapes, and I would give him like Ren and Stimpy cartoons to watch. And I mean, you know, and it's that kind of stuff. That's, I don't know. We can do a whole nother podcast about school, but to me, that's what connects kids to what they're learning is, you know, teachers treating them like real people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is another crazy thing, right? There's coronavirus. You're not in school. That's got to be bizarre.
Bizarre, enjoyable, but also a living nightmare.
Talk about it.
Why
is it a nightmare?
Lord.
Like, just because you're, I mean, obviously separated from your friends and your peers and all that.
Mm-hmm. It's more than that. It's like, the main issue that I have with it is that a lot of people that I know, especially me, we're visual learners. And we're like AV learners. We have to like have hands-on help when we're not able to understand things. We need to ask our friends. We need to be able to see exactly what it is we're working on. Within the past few months, because of everything switching around and being more remote because of the coronavirus, a lot of the systems that the teachers had set up, I'm just going to say it, they were like ass. They were completely ass. And it was like very hard to keep up with it, especially seeing as how like I wasn't able to get the help that I needed, and a lot of students weren't able to get the help that they needed from online. Like it's very difficult to like perceive or like comprehend certain things.
Yeah, because that's what they're doing, right? Text. Is they're trying to teach like remote lessons and get, you know, remote assignments and that kind of thing. Yeah,
ain't nobody gonna watch them damn videos. It's just you staring at their like, bruh, if we wanted to stare at your face, we would go back, immunocompromised or not, and look at your face in class. We are not sitting through videos of you recorded. No, it is not worth it. And especially if you're going to give us these complicated ass assignments at the last minute too. Like literally my English teacher, although I love her, she's like literally like my second mom. She gave us like the most complicated ass assignment at the very end of the semester. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like she gave us this. So the last thing we were supposed to work on for the year, we were supposed to be reading and analyzing the tragedy of Julius Caesar by Shakespeare.
Love it.
I did not.
That's great. That's a great response. Which part? Was it the reading the actual play or the assignment? What was it?
Basically, what she did was she found modernized versions of each scene from each act.
Okay. All right. I think I see where this is going.
And then she had this answer question she formulated based off of the storyline. And then she also had like Spark Notes links and Google Slides notes that somebody wrote based off of this. And I'm just like, how the hell you expect anybody to catch on to this? And I'm pretty sure she was pissed with the amount of work or the level of work that she got turned in, because dead ass, like, even though, you know, I am very astute and I do all of my work, bitch, I did the bare minimum. And I said, good day.
I mean, let's talk about this. You know, how do you, you're in high school, even take coronavirus out of the equation before that, how do you balance school and the responsibilities of being a teenager with, you know, this music that's turning into a real thing in your life and becoming bigger and bigger? How do you find that balance?
A lot of people ask me this question and I don't necessarily have a definite answer, because as I grow older, it changes over time. And like, as I grow up more and more, like trying to balance school, because I'm an honor student. I take honors classes. I'm going to look into AP classes next year. I'm taking more intellectually advanced classes than my normal grade level. And like trying to juggle that, trying to juggle working on my album, my EP, which I just turned in. So thank God I don't have to work on that shit anymore. Yes. But now I have to like finish up my album. I have to start production on my TV series, which actually starts today, but I completely forgot.
What? TV series? Okay, we're going to talk about that in a minute.
Yeah. We were supposed to start production on that today, but because I overslept, I completely forgot. And I forgot about this too. So I definitely wanted to get to this and like have this chat with you. But there's like so much going on that I like have to juggle. And it's really hard to give like so much of my attention to each facet of it. But like, you know, I do it anyway, because these are all things that I love. Like I admittedly, unfortunately, love school. I like being around my friends. I like talking to my friends. A lot of my good ideas come up at school, and of course, a lot of the work they give me.
Are you able to be a kid? Are you able to spend time with your friends?
Oh, yes.
Okay, good.
Like speaking on the TV series again, it's an animated project. And a lot of my friends and I, just like me, are visual artists and writers that are like insanely talented and are working on this together. And literally before the coronavirus hit, we used to have meetings every Friday at 4 p.m. at my friend Haley's place. And we would just sit down with paper, pens, or computers, drawing tablets, everything. And we would just start writing. We'd start storyboarding. everything. We would just like get right to work and we would chat about our day, talking about, oh my God, did you see that teacher today? I was like, oh my God, yeah, I know. He's such a pain in the ass. But anyway, how's that panel going? Like, that's literally literally how our conversations go. Whenever we like hang out in general or whatever, like, and sometimes we don't even do meetings. We just take a chill pill and like chill out. We watch memes, we watch movies, we eat popcorn and play around and stuff. Like, literally, that's our dynamic as friends. Like, we're just like, we're so close together. It's very natural to like have that dynamic and to be able to like process that. And so for me, it's a very gratifying experience to like, you know, be able to have such amazing friends that also support me and what I do and are helping me accomplish much more outside of music, but also involving music as well. So it's just so great.
That's amazing. I mean, there's nothing better in the world in all of my years of living. I don't think there's anything better than making stuff with your friends. I think
it's the best thing in the world.
Point blank period. Nothing better than that ever. And I had no idea you were making a TV show or had that. I knew you were also did visual art, but you know, where do you, and you don't even have to have an answer for this. Maybe you shouldn't even have an answer for this, but you know, if you project out, do you have an idea in your head of sort of, do you want the music to be the primary thing? Do you want to try to do everything? Is there one part of it that's the most fun for you?
You're right. I don't really have a definite answer to this.
I don't think
but
you should
like,
at this point. Yeah.
With creating the show, I think my first thing that comes to mind is like coming up with an intriguing story and a story that resonates with me, resonates with everyone else that's working on it with me. And we'll all be able to know that it'll resonate with those who watch the show. I just really am trying to like, you know, make sure that every facet of it is hit like properly. So that way nothing comes out underdone or forced or anything. Because the last thing I want to do is put any strain on myself, the viewer, or any of my friends who are working on this with me.
I love hearing that because you guys have so much time. Like you are all young people and there is no rush to put out something that later you wish, oh, I wish we would have spent another month or two fixing this or making that part better.
Hell no. We've been working on this for 6+ months. Like we're hitting like every point on the list of anything that could ever possibly go wrong in the future or can make things difficult for any of us mentally and physically in the future. We're just like tackling that now. Yes. So that way in the end game, this is just a fun and gratifying experience for all of us.
Well, and I'll take that further. You know, a lot of producers listen to this show and aspiring artists. And I mean, that's a lesson for anybody doing any kind of creative venture is you take your time, especially if it's your first time out, you know, take your time with it. There's all this pressure. I think before we started recording, we were talking about social media and being online. You know, there's all this pressure because you see everybody else doing so many things all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this pressure, at least personally, and I think a lot of people feel it, that, oh, I got to get in there. I got to speed whatever I'm doing up. Yeah.
but it's just false,
you know?
Yeah. And it took me so long to realize that. And it like really took a, it really took a strain on me. And I even wrote a song about that called Progress.
You put that out, right? Progress?
No, it's a new song.
What am I thinking of? I was just listening to a bunch of your records before we started talking.
I think you might be thinking of Opposites.
Yeah, maybe I am. Maybe I am.
Opposites is about, Opposites is actually about my old manager and how much he forced me to do and like just like trying to like kind of process everything and realize like how much this was affecting me and how different we are as people. And like, why didn't I leave when I got the chance to? Like, thank God I did, and now I'm working with an incredible team. But like, you know, early in my career, especially around the time where I really started getting notoriety, so like when I dropped the 404 remix officially,
which was what, a couple years ago?
That was December of 2018, I think.
Okay, yeah. So you discovered electronic music, right? And you got obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. Was it an immediate thought that I need to make this? I need to get involved? How did production come along for you?
So after I started listening to that music, I started to wonder, like, how are people making this? Like, how are people creating these tracks, these masterpieces? And I was just like, what if I could try doing that myself? That might be like super dope. And so I downloaded like the trial version of FL, which I still use to this day.
Nice. Shout out to trial versions.
Oh, no, I don't even use the trial version anymore. I have a paid version now.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah,
you know, no, I'm just... I can afford it, but, you know. but with like when I first started, I used the trial version like crazy. And I like started playing around, seeing what the different sounds were like, seeing what I could do. And it just like back then I didn't know what the hell an EQ was. I didn't know what sidechain was. I didn't know nothing. I just downloaded a bunch of random shit and just started playing around with it. But like, it's really hard trying to get into a field that you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
I've been producing music as a whole for 8 years. And I debuted the More Kismet project 4 years ago.
Okay.
It's really hard to try and get into production when, even though you come from a whole line of like songwriters and family members that do music or that sing and write songs and produce, that you don't know a damn thing about anything.
Well, so how did you pick it up? Was it kind of just experimentation? Were you watching tutorials?
I never watched a tutorial a day in my life.
I was hoping, like, you'd say that.
YouTube is so, like, yeah, there are some good art. Like, literally, the only good tutorials for, like, music production are from actually established artists in the scene that actually know how to make music or know how to make good music that can properly show you sound design tips and techniques,
right,
that will actually be usable if you're using the same software or if you're gonna like interpolate that and use it in your own DAW. But otherwise, ain't no damn channel in this universe helpful to anybody. And I know it hasn't been helpful to me, because whenever I tried, always sounded like shit. Always. Like, I kid you not. And it was so aggravating, because I felt like I was getting nowhere. And I was just like, you know what, bitch, let me just try doing this shit myself.
Mm.
And doing that shit myself ended up turning out way better than anything I would have ever learned from any tutorial.
And was it kind of just like a gradual process of learning, you know, figuring out stuff on your own? And at this, it's just come to here. Now we're here. Is that basically how it worked?
Yep. I'd watched tutorials for entertainment pleasure, but didn't use nothing that they tried to teach.
I love that.
It for me, it wasn't worth it when there are all the resources there available for me to learn and experiment with there, as opposed to taking the easy way out and learning how to do something that I would end up using as a crutch. But instead, using things in moderation, and using them in an experimental way, which as a result allowed me to develop my style over time and develop my sound and my melodic structures and everything. And
well,
yeah.
And I mean, and you can tell your music. I mean, I just love your music, first of all. But
thank you.
Second of all, I mean, it doesn't sound like anything else. So it makes total sense to me that it was developed separately from, you know, a lot of the resources that a lot of people are using. It's, yeah. I was listening to a bunch of your songs, like I was saying, as a refresher, earlier today. And what I love about it, and I mean this in the most positive, complimentary way, is there's so many ideas packed into your songs. And it's almost like one idea can barely finish before the next idea is like pushing it out of the way.
Yeah.
And there's something really exciting about that. I remember, I'll just tell you this story just because it's a true story that happened, is I was in LA with my friend Kurt Flostradamus, and the remixes for Spaghetti Zoom. I think I had just gotten the promo for that or something. So Kurt and I were listening to him, and I was like, "Oh, you gotta check out this one. You know, this More Kismet one." And both of us listened, and I remember Kurt just being like, "What is this?"
Like, shut up. Are you serious?
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, he loves your stuff, but it's...
I don't even know.
Oh, you didn't know? That's crazy. Yeah.
No, he doesn't follow me anywhere.
Oh, so I'll connect you guys, man. He's the best.
Thank you.
But no, for real. And it wasn't... I didn't even tell the story for that reaction, but I really have this concrete memory of both of us just sitting there, and both of us have done this for a long time. We heard a lot of songs, and just both of us just being like, yeah, I don't know what this is, which is a really cool feeling, you know?
Thank you. Yeah, the Zoom remix, it was such a blessing to be involved in not just the Zoom remix package, but also the Zomboy remixes, the Rotten Roll Part 2 remix pack. To have been offered both of those opportunities by Never Say Die is just such a blessing. And the fact that I was one of their first thoughts that came to mind when thinking of people to remix these specific songs, like, for example, like, I didn't even know they wanted me to remix Born to Survive.
Right.
Like, Born to Survive is like one of the leading singles from it. It blew the fuck up.
It's an anthem for sure.
Oh, 100%. It's definitely an anthem. Like, RX Soul's vocals, gorgeous. And like, I didn't know how I was going to approach the remix. And there were like so many things that fell in my way, like in like the main synth, like the delay and compression effects were created by this granular synthesis delay plugin called Hysteresis by Glitch Machines. Mm. But the specific parameters that I automated, they caused a lot of feedback when rendering them out regularly. So what I had to do is, because they wouldn't do that normally, what I did was I recorded it in the actual mixer track using Edison instead of exporting it, and then I just trimmed it.
Sure.
So that way it would start and end at proper times and not like,
yeah,
have like any like stopping or jumping point. But like,
I do that kind of thing a lot. I like doing that, where you just bounce to audio sort of as quickly as possible and then start chopping it up, you know, almost like a caveman, you know, like,
oh, yeah, I do that all the time now, because that like helps me out so much, especially when I'm using effects that create like very long like latency tails or whatever that like end up making the song way longer than it's supposed to be. I always cut them out, shut down the plugin itself, and then like just start chopping that up. Cause like I use a glue compressor plugin called SGA. What is it called? Let me open up FL real quick. It's called SGA 1566. And it's it's not a multiband compressor, but it's like a compressor / distortion / saturation plugin.
Okay.
And I use it sometimes to make unique hi-hats, or like add some low end to my hi-hats, because sometimes that adds some extra rhythm and swing to my drum beats and my bass patterns and stuff. But it creates a very long latency tail, sometimes between 30 to 45 seconds. So I always render that out as audio and chop it off and shut down that plugin, because I don't want it to trail on for longer than it has to.
Just the fact that you're talking about adding low end to hi-hats.
I know. It's
right there is the perfect like OCD, example of what like, you do.
Cloinks, like, I always do it. I the reason why I add low end to hi-hats is because, like, you know, there's only so much you can do with drum patterns. And I feel like having unique hi-hat patterns with just like a little touch of boom, 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 like low end underneath it, like given a little bit of taming, it's going to sound dope as hell.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And I think that's one of many things that goes into why what you do is unique, you know?
Thank you.
Absolutely. And I wanted to go back because you mentioned a second ago that your family, that you come from a line of musicians and songwriters. And I would love to hear a little bit more about that, what your parents do, you know, kind of how they involved you in music, all that kind of thing.
Yeah. So my dad is a music producer. He actually used to be an urban music composer at CBS.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, that was so dope. I can't even believe that he even worked there at one point in his life, but then he ended up working there again as a marketing supervisor and he created a lot of media assets for Paramount Pictures. Because he's really great at graphic design as well, which I'm pretty sure is where I get that from as well, unfortunately. Maybe. But I don't think he ever drew at any point in his life, so...
So you got that up on him,
right. But yeah, no, my mom is a professional singer. She's also a songwriter. She's a really phenomenal songwriter and singer. And she used to be a part of a girl group called VIP. She was like going to like go pro. She was about to start getting like featured in film soundtracks and everything in like the early 2000s and stuff. And she would have been making bank. But, you know, then out of nowhere, my daddy met my mom. They got married. He impregnated her with me. And she gave all that up. And I don't know why, but I still feel so much regret to this day for her having to give up something that she looked forward to so much because she has to take care of me. And I don't know why, but I've always kind of felt like a burden in that sense. But you know, she always tells me that she loves me and that she wouldn't trade anything, which makes me happy because I don't know what I would do. I don't think I would have ever continued music if it wasn't for her support and for her love and for her help. Like she loves me so much. And she just, her love allows me to make it through whatever stipulations or whatever restraints I put on myself emotionally and physically.
Do you think that she, because she was in the industry and went through the machine a certain extent, is she able to sort of see what's starting to happen for you and to kind of give you a perspective or a mindset that you might not have otherwise had?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, that's a lot. I will say I 100% believe her that, you know, that you are the, you know, that you're the light of her life. I mean, that, there's a lot there, but it's, I feel like they must understand what you're going through. Your parents must understand what you're going through musically, trying to be a student and be a kid and also a serious musician all at the same time. I don't know. I mean, do you feel like that's a support system you have that other people might not have?
Yeah, no, my mom is very supportive of me and she understands like me having to juggle academics and music is very difficult, but she knows that I'm always going to put academics first, even if it's difficult.
That's a pretty good way to talk about your newest song, Flair, right?
Which
is a collaboration with your mom that I really wanted to talk about.
Yes. Wonderful segue.
Hey, it's what I do. It's what I'm here for. But yeah, so I mean, talk about, first of all, you know, Flair to me was an evolution of your sound. I was really impressed by it. I love the song.
Thank you.
But how was she involved with it? What was that process like of actually, you know, you guys working on something for your own project?
She was involved in the production aspect of it. When I was first writing it, it was supposed to be for my album and it was supposed to have a vocals from my cousin Janina, who is, oh my God, literally one of the most talented singers you'll ever hear. She is literally amazing. Janina Colucci, the talent radiates off of her. I kid you not. I can't even believe that she's my cousin. And like, she's such a beautiful singer. And this song was initially intended for her to be on my album. And we were going to write to it. We're going to send the demo to her and everything. So her and I were going to write to it and then send that demo to Nina. And she was going to record and like rework using that demo. And we were supposed to make it a little bit more poppier. But over time, I realized that, like, you know what, it started to become a little bit more personal. The song itself, as far as like the arrangement goes, what it means to me, because it's off of my upcoming 30 EP, and it's the second track, and it essentially follows a timeline of the most significant moments of my life in finding my identity and being able to express my identity in who I love and who I associate with and everything. And Flair is actually about my coming out to my mom. It just really, really strikes a chord. And the song itself, even though it's with my mom, the main reason why I wanted to make sure that she was featured on it is because the song is about her.
Right.
And the song is about me. Flair is essentially a thank you note to my mom for all of the work she's put into raising me to be who I am today and me being able to be free about myself and changing into the wonderful human being that I am today. And I wouldn't trade it for anything. And so that's essentially what that song is about. It's essentially a tribute and a thank you to my mom for allowing me to be myself and giving me the okay to be comfortable with who I am. Because I don't think I would have ever come out, and I don't think I would have ever came out, because, you know, when I first came out, or when I first tried to come out, my dad was not the most supportive of that. He does have gay siblings and everything, but, you know, I always knew he was homophobic. I always knew that was an issue that I would have to kind of tackle with being around him or spending weekends with him as part of custody and stuff. It just really struck a chord with me how supportive my mom was versus how unsupportive he was.
Yeah, the contrast.
Yeah, and it was just very, it was very conflicting, and like trying to kind of process all of that was just very, very, very painstaking and difficult. But I'm glad I did in the end, because I know now that I can trust my mom more than anyone.
Yeah. Yeah. Man, yeah. You're going to make me cry now. that's an experience that I have not had. And, you know, and to hear you talk about it, it sounds like you almost had to, you know, live two lives or be two different people in different situations, right?
Oh, I did.
But I will say, I mean, the positive out of this, I mean, that's a beautiful thing to write a song about. And just the fact, I even to take the bigger bird's eye view of that, the fact that you think about writing songs with the story behind it, you know, because I don't think everyone who listens to that song will immediately know the story behind it, right?
Yeah. People will understand the emotion put into it.
Exactly. Yeah. And is that for your songwriting in general? Is there always a story or an emotion behind it?
Yeah. Especially more recently, like my entire album is like a story within itself. But this EP is like a fucking graphic novel series about my life. It's six tracks, all of which represent a color of the rainbow. In order, it goes like this, the stories of which each track tells. the last track, Duplex, is just my collaboration with Voltra. So that doesn't really have much significant meaning to me other than the fact that, you know, Voltra is one of my favorite producers. But all of the other tracks, it goes track about an argument that I got into with my dad one time when I was 11, saying that if I was gay, he would send me to conversion therapy.
Wow.
A track about thanking my mom as a tribute to my mom for allowing me to be myself, my evolution from knowing that I'm cisgender into transitioning into the person that I am today, which is NB. Because, you know, I don't feel as if I'm masculine or feminine. I feel like I'm in between.
And for the people listening who might not know, NB is non-binary, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And then the track after that, it's about my self-expression, and it's about me being able to express myself in my clothing and my music and my art and everything else in between, just being able to express myself as a human being. Like the person that I've dreamed of being for God knows how long. Mm. I finally get to be that person. After that, it's about my crush. And then after that, it's the closing track with my
friend. Nice. A crush, classic theme to write a song about. That never gets
old. Definitely. And I don't think anyone would have ever expected anyone in bass music to write a song about their crush, but you know, here we are. And that's, shockingly enough, that's the next single that's coming up.
Yeah.
Yep. Leo Trix, me, Adore, coming very, very soon by I Never Say Die. I'm very, very much so looking forward to its release. I'm so proud of how the track came out. And I'm just finally stoked to release it officially.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, how did you link up with Never Say Die?
So I actually linked up with Never Say Die because of the 404 remix. Heckler and Glaze surprisingly knew about me before I did the 404 remix, but what really piqued their interest was me doing the 404 remix. And at the time, NSD, because of how much it blew up and because of how much has been played out by every DJ across the world, they knew how much it meant to me. They knew how much it meant overall to the world. And so they wanted to do a remix pack for it. They wanted me to be on the initial rollout, but because of my, I will gladly say this because I don't even have to associate with him anymore, bitch ass old manager.
Yeah. Get him.
He tried to say that this wouldn't, releasing the 404 remix, especially at the size I was at, because at the time of the 404 remix, I only had like 2,000, 3,000 followers on SoundCloud, right? I was still very, very, very small.
Yeah.
So to say that releasing something on one of the biggest dubstep record labels in the world would be a shitty opportunity for me is like saying that if I knew how to dance or if I knew how to Vogue, that participating in ballroom right. would be a shitty opportunity for me. Like, are you kidding me? That, like, no, if I know how to work it, bitch, I'm finna work it.
Yeah.
Like, you can't tell me, like, no.
But then, so but after that, they sort of stayed in touch with you?
Oh, yeah. And after time, after I fucking dumped that manager, I was like, is there any chance? They said they wanted to release it around Christmas because they still took an interest in it. So I was like, shit, let's do it. So after that, that's when they actually asked me to make my EP character. Schism actually reached out to me and said, yo, I would love to have an EP from you on here. It would be super dope. Let me know if this is something you're down with. And I was like, yes. Like I've been dreaming about this for years, like releasing an EP on Never Say Die. Like that's just like, that's like the dream. And then, you know, 6 months of writing go by and sign the agreement and then Escapes out, that blows up. And then after that, I started finalizing everything, making final tweaks, turn in the final masters, and it came out 10 months ago. And like it literally has just changed so much for me. And after that, like, you know, now I'm working on my new EP for them, releasing all the remixes I've done for them. And I'm so blessed to have such a wonderful relationship with them.
Yeah, I mean, I love a lot of artists on that label. Shout out to Schism. Great, great person.
Schism literally has such a great ear for underground talent. And like, they weren't really releasing anything from like underground artists at first.
Yeah.
I was kind of like their first. And then as a result, they started releasing more stuff from like other NB artists just like me. So like Akios, I can't think of any other ones, but like essentially like after I debuted on there with my original content, then they reached out to Yavin, Akios, and then now they have a great relationship, and they have the Labyrinth EP, Insomnia, all of that. And just like, I feel like there need to be so many more queer voices in bass music.
Yes.
Lifted up and promoted, because there is such a disproportionate amount of queer voices in electronic music. It's sad.
It's very sad. I talk about this a lot. I think about this even more. And it's the weird thing to me is that oftentimes, at least in my experience, what I've seen happen is, you know, a really exciting queer artist will kind of come onto the scene, but, and they'll be sort of initially embraced, but then at a certain point, they sort of get like shuttled off to a different area, you know, and it's like people don't look at their work the same way they would look at the work of a non-queer artist. And this is like a longer discussion, but you know, dance music, period. Dance music comes from queer culture.
Yep.
Like that's where
queer culture. Yes, and people need to understand this. And I'm just going to say this now. If people get triggered by it, then so be it. You cannot be an avid supporter of electronic music if you're homophobic or xenophobic, period, point blank. I don't give a shit.
100%.
You cannot be racist. You cannot be homophobic. You cannot be transphobic when Black, queer, and trans, predominantly Black trans people of color were innovating dance music and creating dance music and how it is today, and it's shaping it into what it is today. It is a queer created community that is now led by straight white people, and that's not okay.
Yes, yeah.
Even if said straight white artists are like super dope producers and like have dope sound design, keep in mind that you wouldn't have dope sound design or a career in electronic music to begin with if it wasn't for people like me. So, yes.
100%. You're absolutely right. Like, and it's one of the reasons it makes me really happy to see a person like you working with a label like Never Say Die in a scene like bass music. I think without people like you, it just doesn't work. It's all the same over and over. I don't know.
Yep.
And I say this as a straight white guy. I mean, I've been a straight white guy in dance music for a crazy, like almost 20 years now. And it's getting boring, honestly. Like it's the bigger things have gotten, the more money has come in, the more eyes that are on it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what happened. This is mainstream white culture. This is what we do, right? Is sort of take the interesting underground sounds and, you know, whittle away all the edgy parts and all the interesting parts. And
yep, gentrify, you know, the fuck out of it for no reason, leaving.
Well, the reason is money, right? I mean, the reason is people want to make money off it.
It is so aggravating. It is so aggravating being queer and of color and trying to make a way in an industry that in no way, shape, or form is accepting or forgiving of any queer artist and is equally as unforgiving to Black artists, specifically Black artists. Like it's so painful to try and I don't understand why people choose to be so rude sometimes, but like people are just fucking malicious in like comment sections and on lives and everything. Like literally, like I wear dresses. I wear like more feminine clothing, especially seeing as how now I can. I wasn't able to at first, but like now that I'm like fully able to, like I wear more feminine clothing. I do makeup. I do all that shit. And like people find some way, some shape or form to like fucking complain about it and just be disgusting human beings. And it really sucks that these people have nothing better to do with their damn lives.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, here we are.
Yeah. I mean, here we are. I will say I'm going to use your own words to tell you something, which is that I know you know this, but it's not your responsibility to fix those people.
And
I know you know that, but there's a lot of people out there who are not like that. And you will find more and more of those people as you go. Use me as a resource, use anyone around as a resource. Like, I'm just very happy that you are here, that you are doing this. I really like talking to you. I'm having a great time doing this. I hope you'll come back on sometime because, this is awesome.
I would love to. Honestly, this was so great. Honestly, I've been listening to Back to Back for almost a year now. And like,
oh, that makes me happy.
I've always dreamed of like being on it. But like, you know, because I was younger and my thoughts weren't as, you know, concise and as, you know, properly formulated as they are now, I probably just would have been like, but now I'm like sitting here having an actual conversation with you. And like, it's way better than I would have ever imagined. And like, if I can get back on a better sleep schedule and I set up ahead of time, I would love to do this again.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you're welcome anytime you want. Is there anything else we haven't talked about? Anything else you want to get out there?
In case you haven't heard it, I do have a new single out right now called Flare. It features my mom, Mama Kismet. I love her so much with all of my heart. And it is the leading single off of my upcoming 30P, which is set for release sometime this fall on Never Say Die. It would mean the world to me if you could go check it out. It's a very special song to me. And writing it was very painstaking and I didn't think I would ever be able to finish it. But I'm glad I did. And I'm glad it's out because it has been receiving so much more love than I was expecting. And that makes me so happy to know that a song this personal and this emotionally raw, although unlike anything anyone's ever heard from me before, is still being so well received and so easily distinguishable as something that she would hear from me. But yeah, I'm just really glad that for those of you who have listened to it are enjoying it. And for those of you who haven't listened to it yet, I strongly suggest you do. It is a very special song and I think you are going to really enjoy it. As far as what I mentioned earlier, I am working on an animated television series with my friends. If you want to find out more information about it, sometime when, I don't want to say when this all dies down because it really shouldn't.
Yeah.
But when things start to be able to take a little bit more of a lighter approach to life, even though we're in the midst of a pandemic and everything, I'll be releasing more information about it. I would love for you all to support it if possible. I do actually have an official account for it. It's stargazers.series. The account is linked in the bio on my Instagram page. If you'd like to go follow that account, I will be posting more information on it soon.
And I'll link to that in the description of this episode too.
Perfect. Thank you so much. But yeah, that's pretty much about it. I don't really have anything else coming up like super duper soon.
You said you were working on an album, right?
Oh yes. My second studio album. That was actually supposed to come out this year, but due to the pandemic and due to how dark everything is going on, and because it's still a very underdone thing that I'm still trying to like finish and finalize, I have decided to postpone it until June of 2021 instead of this month.
Right.
So, be on the lookout for it then. I really hope that I don't have to postpone it any further because even if I don't get to tour alongside it, I'm still going to release the album. Because it's a very important body of work to me and I've been dying to get it out. it breaks barriers of my sound that you've never heard from me before. Like even with the stuff I'm doing for this EP, this is post album stuff coming out before the album even is released.
I got you. Yeah.
So, just to be able to do that stuff with the EP, but to show you a completely different side of me with my album, I'm just really looking forward to seeing how everyone takes it. I'm really looking forward to putting it out next year. That's pretty much it.
That's fantastic. Thank you for taking the time to do this. I really like talking to you.
Same here. It was really, really great having this conversation with you. I'm so thankful. Thank you so much for having me on. Thank you so much for letting me talk about everything that I have going for me and everything that I'm working on. It really means the world to me. And I really appreciate
it. It means a lot to me too. You are welcome back anytime. I'm going to wrap it up. I'm just going to ask the same question I ask. You may know it if you listen to the show, but just a kind of off the top of your head thing, whatever pops into your mind, just a time in your life, a moment, a memory when kind of in a single moment, music really had a deep impact on you, really meant something to you.
One time when I was like 12, 13 years old, a lot of my old friends shut me out. They said that I was being a bad friend and that I was putting all of my problems on them. And all I was doing was venting to them because that's what you do with your friends. You tell them about your problems and you ask for help. And as friends, it's your job to help your friends out. Like that's what friends are for, to help people with not with every problem they have, but with problems that are solvable and problems that can be addressed and nipped in the bud and dealt with as friends, like sticking together. But instead of doing that, they all just shut me out and they all stopped talking to me for months. And it made me feel so much like shit that I tried to kill myself by suffocating myself with a pillow.
Oh my God.
And it was a very... Sorry.
No, take your time.
It was a very weakening moment in my life. And I didn't know how to process it. So I just tried writing a song about it. That song is never coming out because I don't think that I could ever try putting something out that raw, especially seeing as how the production on the track is so very underdone as well. But just to have like written it from that perspective and that point in my life, it was just like, it was my opportunity to vent when I couldn't vent to the people that I thought I could.
Yeah.
And it just really, it really struck a chord with me. And that's when I knew that like music was a very integral part of my life. I definitely regret doing that. I don't know why, considering all I could have done was just, I did not activate you, Jesus. Oh my God. She always does this.
The worst possible time.
Yes. By the way, that's a Mama Kismet in the background. I don't know. Can't hear you, but it was a very significant point in my time, point in my life where I knew that music was a very integral part of my life. And I knew that I could tell a story with what I wrote, for anyone that might have gone through what I might have gone through, or that may be experiencing something that I haven't before, but needs a proper way to express it. That's what my music is for.
That's beautiful. And again, that goes back to the storytelling thing we were talking about before, that when you can attach an actual emotion, let alone something as powerful as that.
Mental health is such a very underspoken topic, especially in the dance community. Like, oh my God.
It is
insane to me how insensitive people are to other people's mental health. And like, and I feel like it's very important for me as a songwriter and as an artist to kind of tell that. So kind of like going back to my show for a second, We talk about themes like anorexia, depression, anxiety, finding your identity. And it's like, it's very important to show people that this is a common issue.
Yeah.
And it can happen anywhere, even in a made up universe named after a fucking flower, billions of light years away from Earth.
Yes.
Like you, it doesn't just happen to you. It happens to everybody. And this issue needs to be addressed before it gets out of hand and we start losing more lives to suicide and to depression and anxiety and anorexia and eating disorders. And that's also very underrepresented in media that I think just needs to be addressed somehow. And I want to be one of those people that addresses it properly and speaks up about it and tells stories about it that, albeit heart-wrenching, are still telling stories about a very, very fucking serious issue that goes on in life that everyone probably has.
Yes, like, that's what I was going to say is, you know, it's a common story and it happens to a lot of people. And it's, and I don't say common to mean that it's not important, but I say it to mean that it's something I think a lot of people have struggled with, but you're absolutely right that it is not talked about, you know, whether people are ashamed or scared or just pressured, I don't know, but it's, and in the music world, in the dance music world, particularly, I mean, I talk about this with peers and friends of mine all the time. I mean, I don't think I know a professional producer, professional DJ who hasn't struggled with some of the, you know, depression, anxiety at some point. It's a fact, you know, it's a tough business and sensitive people are in it. And yeah, me too. 100%. I think that's beautiful to have that kind of outlook, especially when there's so much potential and so much more to go. I think we're done. I can't say anything more. This is great. I love talking to you. Thank you for doing it.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Take care. Peace. All right.
Bye.
All right, that's the show. Shout out to Mor Kismet. Great to have you on. For everybody out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't forget, Mor Kismet's new single, Flare, featuring Mama Kismet, is out right now on Never Say Die. That is the first single off of their upcoming EP on the same label. They're working on an animated TV show. There's a full album coming, and there is so much more. So you got to go follow Mor Kismet. There's a link in the description of this episode where you can go keep up with them, keep up with everything they're doing. You can also follow me if you would like. My name is at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media, or backtobackpod@gmail.com is the email address. That's it for this week. We're back. It's good to be back with you. I hope everyone out there is doing well. Stay safe, take care of yourself, keep fighting the good fight. I've got some great episodes lined up for you for the rest of the month. I'm sending love to all my listeners out there. And that is it. Have a good week, and I will talk to you next Tuesday. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.